You're listening to a previously recorded Gulf Coast Live. Later this hour, we're going to spend some time with a lawyer who specializes in homeowners association law to find out what rights residents of Florida's numerous gated or non-gated communities have when it comes to planting Florida-friendly yards that aren't just the typical lush green grass. But first, planting Florida-friendly yards. With so much focus on water issues right now because of the nearly year-old red tide bloom that continues to devastate marine wildlife and the several months-old toxic blue-green algae bloom that's being fed by nutrient-rich releases from Lake Okeechobee, we thought it would be a good time to explore the world of xeriscaping. One factor in our water woes equation is stormwater runoff containing nitrogen and phosphorus from fertilizers. And this runoff does not only come from agricultural fields, but also from homes, businesses, and golf courses. Xeriscaping uses mindful landscaping techniques that reduce the need for fertilizer and water by using plants that are native or more properly suited to the natural conditions we find here in Southwest Florida. Joining me now to tell us more is Thomas Becker. He's a Florida-friendly landscaping education and training specialist with the University of Florida IFAS Extension Office in Port Charlotte. Thomas, thanks for coming down for today's show.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Marlene Rodak. She's the vice president of the Cocoloba chapter of the Florida Native Plant Society. Marlene, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. Have you chosen xeriscaping or some other non-traditional landscaping options? And if so, how have your neighbors responded? Or maybe you just want to know how to get started. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. Thomas, let's start with you. What's the background of the concept of xeriscaping?
Well, that concept really is used across the country. It goes into uses the word xero from the Greek, meaning dry, and scape, meaning the view of scenery. So xeriscaping is normally associated with dry soils, landscaping.
So it kind of originated in a dry climate area.
Right, and didn't originate pretty much in Florida. And that's why the xeriscaping terms have all been removed from legislation, and it's been replaced with Florida-friendly landscaping.
Oh, okay.
Because we have so many opportunities to plant in wet areas, in soils that do stay wet.
Yes.
And we have a very different requirements. I mean, we have succulents that we can use on very, very dry soils. But we also have lots of other plants that are suited for wetter conditions.
So xeriscaping came from Denver, I believe.
Yes, it did.
Where things are just a little bit – the situation in the ground is drier, but the air is also dry. Here, the air is nowhere near dry, as
right.
We all know with our humidity levels. So we would need kind of a different type of an approach than exactly what works in Denver is probably not going to work here.
Exactly. Okay. And they don't have a wet and a dry season.
So we're calling it Florida-friendly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's been around now for over 10 years.
All right.
You brought with you all the legislation that uses that phrase now in the state. And it is used by not only associations, like you mentioned, homeowner associations, but homeowners, governments, public, private industries, businesses. So we have people from a variety of backgrounds coming to our office asking for assistance.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that have had their interest piqued in this. Marlene, he's referencing that you have some materials in front of you talking about Florida-friendly landscaping. What does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it means if you're going to live down here, then you need to understand how to live properly down here. And how to plant properly. One of the things that we struggle with when we move here is you think, well, I'd like my begonias and I'd like my impatiens and all those things that we had up north, when truly they don't belong down here and they aren't going to do well down here.
Impatiens are impatient. They want that water. And they use a lot of water.
Yeah. Yeah. They basically won't grow in this heat. So we've moved down here because of the climate. And we're somehow expecting our landscaping to move down here despite the climate. And it just doesn't make sense. So what really works well is to plant your Florida-friendly landscaping or the native plants that are used to growing down here that the insects and the animals have evolved to eat. So what happens is the developments go in and they take out all of the native landscapings, and they like to name some streets after those native plants.
Actually remove it, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Just for a reminder.
In memoriam.
And then we put in all these exotic plants where their insects and pollinators have been left behind in those countries where they belong, instead of trying to use the native plants. And it is a complicated subject. It's a complex issue. There is so much information out there. It's hard for one person, let alone a group of people, to truly understand.
So, okay, I have a question. People come down here from somewhere else, which is usually the Midwest, it seems like, in our area, and they're used to having green grass and green lawns, and it's a different grass, though. It's grass that you don't mind walking in barefoot. Here, you don't want to walk in your green grass barefoot. Well, unless you have very sturdy feet. But it's what is that grass that we have here? What's
well,
it called?
It's St. Augustine grass, Floratam grass, or it could be Bahia grass. And Bahia grass is the one that we do recommend in this area for lawns that you're not going to be irrigating on a regular basis.
So there is a grass that you can use, and you can have a green lawn, you're telling me, using these Florida-friendly principles.
Yes, you can. And we want people to use drought tolerant plants, and there's one turf that's recommended, Bahia grass.
Bahia grass.
Yes.
And can people buy that in like sod pallets or?
Yes, they can.
Or do they have to plant it from seed?
Sure. No. It's planted using sod pieces.
Okay. Because usually when people start talking about Florida friendly, they're thinking they're going to have an all gravel front yard.
No, that's not it. We actually want our yards to be mulched with organic materials, with bark, with recycled pine straw, that sort of thing.
I've been seeing a lot
Once
of the pine needles.
Once you put
needles.
Stone down.
Yeah.
So Xeriscaping really recommends mulch, but not stone mulch. Always an organic material.
And part of that is because the microbes in that mulch will break down that mulch into phosphorus and nitrogen.
Right.
And that nitrogen and phosphorus will fall down and feed the plants.
It'll just kind of trickle in.
Yeah, right. But our sandy soils won't hold that. So it's sort of moving with the water.
Okay. That makes sense. But is there bad mulch and good mulch?
Yes.
Is there mulch to avoid?
Mulch is bad, bad, bad.
Okay, so why is cypress mulch bad?
Because we like our bald cypress trees, and they're far more valuable than being chipped and placed in a bag of mulch.
So then what, when you're advising someone on their yard, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here because, I mean, I think a lot of people are very curious about this. But let's stick with mulch, and then I'm going to go back to the very beginning. If somebody is doing mulch, what are they looking for? What do they want to see on the bag?
Ideally, I would say that it's made out of an invasive exotic like Melaleuca.
Oh, just cut that thing up and put it on top. Okay.
Yeah. Or an organic material.
Yeah.
For sure.
And what about the different colors? Is that a big deal? Because there's black, there's brown, there's red.
For some people, it's a big deal. I think there's a lot of people are not attracted to red mulch. I think if there's any one mulch that can drive blood pressures up, it's going to be red.
You're kidding. I am so out of style because I kind of think it looks good.
A lot of people do, but there are a lot of people who do not.
Yeah.
The city of Naples, I believe, has created their own color of mulch.
Really?
Yeah.
What color is it?
It's a certain shade of brown, and they have it formulated and dyed, and that's what's used.
Wow.
And I believe it's Melaleuca.
Oh, well. Okay.
And there's people like me who use free mulch, materials that are left in a park. And it may not be a premium mulch, but for the price, you can't beat it. Yeah. And it covers a lot of ground.
I imagine late last year there was a lot of Hurricane Irma mulch
there sure was,
around,
yeah.
You know. So let's just go to the very beginning. Say you got a big lawn covered in St. Augustine grass. Where do you start? As a homeowner?
Well, you're ideally, you want to minimize that mulch or that turf. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing in all cases, but it's just really difficult to keep St. Augustine alive in Florida. It doesn't want to grow. Everything wants to eat it. So to keep it, you're going to be putting fertilizer on there and pesticides to try to keep the grubs out and that. So ideally, pick a small area and make that your turf grass area based on your need. Do you really need that? Otherwise, maybe there are other alternatives to that.
And if it's an area with a permanent irrigation already there, use it to get the plants established.
Yeah.
And then you can, once you've chosen the right natives that are drought tolerant, like they should be for xeriscaping, then you can turn it off and those plants should survive without the additional water through the dry season.
So do you suggest people just kind of leave the St. Augustine as it is and let the bugs get it and let whoever is going to come around get it and see what let the cards fall where they may, if you will, and then go in and start planting what you want as your native plants?
That's one way to do it. One of the things that we recommend is that you take cardboard or newspaper where you want your planting beds and you put that cardboard or newspaper down in thick layers and just put the mulch right on top of it, a good thick layer of mulch on top of it, and then cut those holes out to put your plants in. And what that will do is actually turn your St. Augustine into fertilizer for your plants. As the grass dies, it releases the nitrogen and phosphorus that it took up into its leaves, and it will drop it back down into the soil for your plants to take up.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that has worked very well for me as well.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
But once you get everything kind of the way you want it, do you want to put down walkways or paths? Do you ever want to do crushed shell or anything like that?
I do. I don't know about Tom, but I want
to. This is more of an aesthetic question, I'm guessing, right?
Of course, you can use bark mulch as a pathway material too, if it was different colors, that sort of thing. I'm not a big proponent of using stone or crushed shell simply because of you get a lot of weed problems and they're harder to get the weeds out when they're between stones. It's hotter, drier. But I would say, you know, pathway material, stepping stones, and probably that if you need to have something more porous so that – that's, I think, our real issue is there's so much water that still runs off our properties and goes directly into waterways that are – we're not intentionally trying to feed nitrogen and phosphorus to our waterways, but it's being picked up simply from rainwater that's coming off our house, going across our lawn and ending up in stormwater drains.
So the goal of the Florida Friendly Landscaping is to just not be adding more into that mix, more of the phosphorus.
Exactly.
Once you get your yard laid out, you've gotten rid of your St. Augustine is the one that – so you get rid of that and you have a regular – either you have the other Bahia?
Bahia grass.
Bahia?
Yep.
Okay. You either have that or then you have other plants, you know, and you have all your mulch and things like that. Then you will not really need to put any fertilizer on that? As long as you've picked Florida-friendly plants.
That's correct.
And put the right plant in the right place, and you're using good practices. But generally speaking, your native plants are going to be your best success in growing in our soils, and you should not need additional fertilizer for those. But to kind of back up a little bit, one of the purposes of a Florida-friendly landscape is to slow down the rainwater, which is really important. The whole concept is to slow down rainwater so that it just moves more slowly and the impurities will filter out more effectively than if you were to even take a downspout and run it down your driveway. Goes down your driveway, into the gutter, down into your stormwater pond. If that slowly runs across landscaping, the water, by the time it gets to the stormwater pond, will be much cleaner than if it had run down the impervious surfaces.
It's almost like your own water, your own marshland that's filtering the water.
Exactly.
And right? That's where trees become important. You want to install trees to slow that flow of water that's dropping from the sky. And also there's more roots there to absorb water before it gets into the stormwater drains.
You know, I had an arborist on a little bit after Hurricane Irma, and he said there are people that are having a bit of a fear of trees because of possibility of them being blown over. But what he brought up, which is a great point, I'm going to go ahead and repeat it. He said, I'd rather have a tree put a hole in my roof than have a straight wind with nothing breaking that wind blowing my entire roof off. So the windbreak that trees do provide is something not to be overlooked, even though there is, you know, a fear of a tree falling over if it does get snapped in a hurricane. But what's to say about native Florida trees and their ability to withstand hurricanes as opposed to other trees that have been introduced down here? Are there tree selections that are better with Florida friendly?
Well, the university has reviewed both native and non-native trees and their ability to hold up in storm-force winds. And so we have publications that we give people that describe that. For example, live oak trees are very storm-resistant, although I've heard of live oaks falling on homes. It's just structurally trees have to be properly pruned throughout their lifetime to make sure that their scaffold branches are not hanging over a house.
And they also need to be planted in non-compacted soil so the roots can get down in there, because we saw a lot of those. They look like they were sitting on a doily coaster and flipped over and it was stuck to the bottom, the whole root thing.
But that's a very complicated issue. Depending on if you have circling roots or if you have healthy roots that are actually going out and stabilizing the tree, or if the trees are planted in a straight line versus a clump, there are so many variables. But a mature live oak tree can uptake 400 liters of water a day. Now, that's a lot of flood water.
But do they get thirsty, though, in the dry season? They can handle when it's dry?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Look at our water table and think about their roots. Their roots can get to water all the time. We're just not that high. Our elevation just isn't that high.
So they're opportunistic. If they have it, they'll take it up.
Oh, yeah.
So a tree, the right tree in the right place. And a live oak is a large tree species. You have to have the room for it.
Yeah.
For it to you know, the roots can go out and be the structure to hold the tree in place long term.
Yeah, I've seen what they can do to a driveway.
They can
really make that tough. So you make sure you have a lot of room. We have a call coming in from Mark in North Fort Myers. Mark has a question. What would you like to ask, Mark?
Oh, well, I just want to – first, great show. I'm a botanist. I've called in here before.
Okay. Good to hear from you.
I just wanted to mention that according to the Institute of Systematic Botany, Florida State University, what's called St. Augustine grass is a Florida native.
Okay.
Doesn't mean I think it's the greatest thing for lawns. In the wild, it's mostly found around wetter places, edges of forests, but it is a native.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mark. We had a head shake, though.
I think that the St. Augustine in our lawns is a stretch to call a native plant.
Maybe it's natively occurring, but just not in the places where we're making it a big patch in front of our house.
Perhaps. I would just say that it's a little debatable calling the St. Augustine grass that we have in our yards a native plant.
Maybe a botanist would say it may be native to Florida, but not in the way that it's presented at this point.
Right.
In front of everybody's manicured lawns.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
And that's an important factor when it comes to the legalness of what communities choose. It says in the rules they should have St. Augustine grass, but people will become Florida friendly and choose to plant other types of plants.
Yeah.
Why is that a problem? Well, it is because the rule says it needs to be St. Augustine grass. So, you know, I think we definitely want to explore that further with So maybe later in the show.
Maybe just being native is not necessarily enough, because you can right. amend something that is native to a point where it can get itself into a destructive type of a situation where it needs too much to be maintained in that way.
And that's why we call the right plants our Florida-friendly plants, rather than sticking to just the natives alone, because there's just going to be instances where we don't have a native that fits perfectly into our constructed landscape.
Mm-hmm. We have another call coming in from Doug in Fort Myers. Doug, what would you like to ask?
Well, first of all, I just got to say a native plant doesn't necessarily mean no maintenance. A lot of times
there's
right. more maintenance.
Yeah.
But on grass, if St. Augustine's a native, it's been so altered in labs to be a product we want to see in our lawns that it doesn't resemble native anymore. But one thing that's a pet peeve for me is the grass heights. People come from up north and they cut their grass an inch tall or an inch and a half tall. And if you go to any of the clinics on nice lawns that IFAS has, they'll tell you that our typical Bahia and St. Augustine lawns need to be cut at 3.5-4 inches in height.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of reasons for that. Partly the roots get longer, it shades out the weeds, and it makes for a better lawn that needs less water.
Exactly.
That is a great
quality landscape there.
Yeah. Thanks, Doug. That was a great pointer for us to keep in mind. So proper height, if you're going to have grass, is 2 to 3 inches?
It's actually 3 to 4.
3 to 4.
But 4 is better than 3.
I'm so Midwestern, I tried to even make it shorter. Sorry about that.
And that brings up an important point about the roots. So if you look at your grass mm-hmm. that's 4 inches tall, if you're cutting it properly, which most people don't, so you have your 4 inches above the ground. Below the ground, you probably have 4 inches of roots. So 4 inches of roots is not a whole lot to stabilize our sandy soil. So that's another one of the important reasons why we want to see other plants in there, shrubs and trees, because they have deeper roots that are going to stabilize the soil much better than sod.
Okay, so exactly. Placing some placement of bushes and trees throughout that lawn and making it having some roots going a little bit deeper. That makes sense.
Yes.
I see what you're saying. We have another call from Mike in Estero. Mike, what would you like to ask?
Hello. Thanks, guys, for having me on. I moved down here from Kentucky many years ago and kind of envisioned having a nice tropical yard. We're in the process of redoing our landscaping now, and I'd like to put in some banana trees or a coconut tree and some fruit-bearing stuff, and we're not allowed. And my question is there an environmental reason some of these communities won't allow fruit-bearing trees, or is it just, or is it something, different?
You mean the rationale behind making fruit-bearing trees not a thing in HOAs?
Yeah. I was just curious.
All right, Mike, we'll have the answer offline, but definitely listen to the second half, because we're going to be talking to an attorney who is going to tell us a little bit about some of the laws governing homeowners associations and what they can and cannot enforce and how they do that. So he'll be on to talk to us about the legal angle on that, but we'll get the, I don't know if it's aesthetic or a taste kind of a reasoning behind HOAs for making these kinds of decisions. But thanks for your question, Mike. We'll give it to you offline. So why do HOAs generally kind of tend away from fruit-bearing trees? Do you know? What is the reasoning behind that?
Rats.
You're right.
Really?
It's just this thing about rats. And they believe that fruit trees will invite rats. They will. Generally, they do allow fruit trees in pots. It's not that they ban them completely, but they tell you to put them in pots, which is a good idea because they generally take a lot of fertilizer, and you're better off to fertilize in a pot where you have the roots constrained than in the soil where that fertilizer can run off and contribute to things like red tide.
And the fruit also creates some liability in high traffic areas. And it becomes high maintenance, just keeping up with the fruit dropping, regular maintenance, which is something that we think we can do away with all maintenance with Florida Friendly, but we can't. There's still always going to be fruit. And most of our native plants, what's the fruit going there for? What is it there for?
Wildlife.
Well, for wildlife. And
yeah,
so
the raccoons get my bananas every year.
We defeat the whole purpose of trying to get rid of all the fruit in a planned community because wildlife won't be present.
What are some Florida-friendly fruit trees? Which ones would you recommend anybody get? I mean, I know the bananas. I never fertilize them. And, in fact, I've cut them down to a nub, and they come back every year. And yeah. The raccoons always get the bananas. But so I've never seen one myself. I mean, I've seen them on the tree, but in the middle of the night, they go away. But my question is, then, are there fruit-bearing items that could be suggested in a Florida-friendly landscape?
Well, I mean, there's lots of trees that produce fruit. It's just a matter of the right tree in the right place. So
basically, your citrus is not native.
Right.
It, as you've had on other shows, the citrus has a lot of issues. But there are other things that are edible. Native plants that are edible, like the cocoa plums, you could certainly eat those.
Oh, that was the name of the coca loba?
No, the coca loba is actually the sea grape tree.
But you can make jelly out of that, can't you?
You can, yes. And it is edible also. It's also a pigeon plum tree and some other varieties, but generally it's the sea grape tree is what we refer to as the coca loba. So there are some edibles, but most of the really delicious stuff that we want to eat is
the stuff we really want, right?
Yeah, it's not going to be a native, but that's not to say that it's not all right to put in your yard and to have maybe some fruit trees in your yard, bananas or whatever. There are ways to manage those and to feed those in more environmentally friendly ways than dumping Miracle-Gro on them. You could, with your bananas, you could take your kitchen scraps and just put a little compost pile in the middle of them.
I've done that, and the raccoons also love that.
You have some raccoons.
I do, yeah.
Many of our palm trees have lots of nuts and fruits that are feeding wildlife, and that's another criticism people have. I don't want cabbage palms because they produce too much
rats
fruit
live in them.
And rats live in them.
Yeah, but the banyan trees the rats really love, don't they? I've heard them. And then the palms, they use them like little hammocks. I mean, I don't think you're going to avoid it. It's Florida. It's like saying I don't want to see a palmetto bug ever.
You know, my response, which popped out while we were on a site visit a week or two ago, was when they said, well, we don't want rats. I said, well, would you rather the coyotes take your dogs? You know?
Yeah. Let's take that out of the food chain and see what happens. But we had a question for someone, I think, that came in over, I believe, Facebook. But are there materials that homeowners should keep away from their house to prevent water intrusion? Something maybe like, I guess it was back when we were talking about mulch. Maybe somebody thought of this about things causing problems with water getting too close to your house, or maybe something near the house that can absorb water?
Well, we don't recommend planting right up to the foundation of your house simply because then you have to keep it watered or irrigated. It's better to use a couple inches of stone as your border for the house so that it will more quickly dry out. And make sure your sprinkler system is not
aiming it at
the side of your house. That's so very important.
And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from Tom Becker right here. And he told me when I was installing my yard, don't plant anything underneath the eaves.
Right.
Plant everything just outside of the eaves. And that was the best advice ever because everybody, you buy these little plants and they're cute and you want them right up against your house and you don't realize how big they're going to get. So put them at least outside of the eaves.
Probably like a couple feet.
Yes, 3 feet is the standard.
Yeah.
At least 3 feet.
So we talked a little bit about HOAs and about deed-restricted communities where people are unable to, you know, do much in the way of xeriscaping or Florida-friendly planting. Have you had a lot of pushback from homeowners associations or people that come to you saying, I want to do this, but I can't. My hands are tied. What kind of advice do you give people that are approaching this, but then they're afraid to even, you know, irritate their neighbors?
Well, I think people should take it in steps, and they should go through all the steps that you followed, Marlene. You know, present a plan of native landscaping to your architectural and review committee.
And that's the key.
It is.
The statute, the Florida statute, says that an HOA cannot prohibit a Florida-friendly landscape. But that doesn't mean that everyone is entitled to one. You still, as a homeowner, you need to go follow every one of those steps detailed by your covenants that says you have to apply to the Architectural Review Board and you have to get it approved and all of that. They cannot prohibit it, but they can, but they do have the ability to approve it.
Yeah, instead of, you know,
right.
They can say, no, you can't use all white rocks and four cactuses.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's usually those yards that are a complete surprise to their boards, community boards, that really are upsets people.
That becomes an issue.
Yeah.
But the thing is that a Florida-friendly yard can look identical to every other yard in the neighborhood.
I think that's a big misperception.
It is a big misperception. And it's really because once you start putting native plants in your yard or these ecological plants in your yard and you start having a functional ecosystem, you get addicted to it. All of a sudden you're like, oh, I have these butterflies. It's so wonderful to be out here. I want more. I want more. And it's a drug.
Is there a resource where people can find this is a Florida-friendly tree, these are Florida-friendly plants? Do you guys?
Yes, we have that. Well, you have it with the native plant community, but we have it with Florida Friendly, www.floridayards.org.
Oh, wow. This is a big trifold two ways kind of a thing. We've got six panels here full of things to look at, and they look colorful and pretty. So this is something that's your organization puts together?
Yes. The Florida Native Plant Society created these brochures for six different regions around the state, and this is the Southwest region. And this, the inside is a matrix with plant options from sun to shade and dry to wet.
Well, I like how it's organized. It makes it really easy. I'm looking at different parts. Going, oh yeah, that would be towards the back of my yard.
Sure.
you know where things are wet, right? And you have an event coming up this Thursday at 7 o'clock.
We do. We have natural soil amendments with George Kolibas. Uh-huh. Kolibas, and he is talking to our chapter at the Holton Eco Center at Unitarian Universalist Church. In Fort Myers,
right?
Yeah.
All right.
And then every Sunday we have we bring out native plants at Crescent State Park for their farmer's market and native plant sale. And we teach people about native plants there.
I've seen the signs for that.
Yay.
I know, but, so the signs are working.
And many of my volunteers are master gardeners in Charlotte County. And so they become our spokespersons and advisors for Florida Yards as well as myself.
So if somebody's wondering about this in Charlotte County, they just call up your office or sign
right.
up?
Or they can contact any of the extension offices in each county and they'll be referred to people who are interested in, you know, water savings, water improvement, water quality. Mm-hmm. There's ample resources out there. And I probably visit with new homeowners, you know, several times a week, individuals who – people are just always moving here.
Yeah, it's really bewildering too. You know, you get here and everything is different.
So we have publications that we can give people and there's lots and lots of University of Florida resources online as well as
the Native Plant Society.
Everybody has a plant list. There's even a Florida Water Star program where you can have your newly constructed home certified as, you know, saving water. Mm-hmm. And so there's definite checklists that you can use to determine how good your yard is following the practices.
And on the Florida Native Plant Society, FNPS.org, there's a plants database where you can put in your county and mm-hmm. different options, maybe whether you want butterflies or whether it's a moist area. And it will pop out a whole list of trees, shrubs, ground covers, vines, wildflowers for your for what you want.
For exactly where you're at. And we have links to the websites also on our website, which is wgcunews.org, and just click on the Gulf Coast Live or gulfcoastlive.org. You could also go there, find this show, and there will be links in there. But that's all the time we have for this part of the show. So I want to thank my guest, Thomas Becker, Florida-friendly landscaping education and training specialist, the University of Florida IFAS Extension Office in Port Charlotte. That's a mouthful. Thomas, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it. And also Marlene Rodak, the vice president of the Cocoloba chapter of the Florida Native Plant Society. Marlene, thanks for your time as well.
Hey, thank you.
When we return, what if you live in a community with a homeowners association where everyone has the same standard green grass yards, but you want to make some non-standard landscaping choices, like xeriscaping? What rights do you have? We're joined by a lawyer who specializes in HOA law to find out. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.